If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
On this Friday episode of Nothing Major, we're going to talk about our Monte Carlo memories. We did not have many of them, but we are going to give our memories. We might have a little Monte Carlo quiz that we don't know what the questions are. That might be part of the show. And also, part two of the Riley Opelka interview will drop in this episode. We had a lot of fun interviewing him. He was a fantastic guest. We had to divvy it up into two parts because he gave us so many insightful answers. So that's ahead on the Friday show. So let's get it going. Welcome back to Nothing Major. I'm John Isner again, joined with the usual cast of suspects here, Jack Sox, Stevie Johnson, Sam Querrey, and Charlie Fox and his crew at SIF Creative. They are absolutely amazing with everything they do at our pod, the editing, all they do. Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Sam, on our Monday episode, you know, you mentioned that you had something that grinded your gears, and that was nutritionists in general. And now, lo and behold, you have something else that grinds your gears. And we actually just found out that you're keeping an iPhone notes version of everything that sort of annoys you.
Yeah.
And this one, I want to hear your rant. So the floor is yours. And I think we're going to agree with you here. And a lot of people would agree with you. And it's just quite simply that road bikers are annoying. We don't know anything else. Sam, go ahead.
I mean, you said it. Road bikers are annoying. They're the most entitled group of people. They're like just like, it grinds me down when they're on like the main roads. I don't care if you go take your bike into the mountain or like a side road, but it's like on the normal roads. And if you ever like kind of are in your car, you're trying to maybe go around them or you get to a light, like they just feel entitled and it just, and they're always wearing these, why do they always wear the ridiculous outfits? Why can you not get on a road bike and wear normal clothes, by the way?
Aerodynamics, baby.
No, well, they're not racing. It's not the Tour de France. They're like rolling down,
Armstrong. I agree.
You know, Martin Luther King Boulevard. And they're just like, they got these full on, like they think they're in the Tour de France. It's just like, it's brutal.
My thing is they never stop like at four-way stop signs.
No, they don't obey the laws.
By the way, like every single street is a four-way stop in my neighborhood, but not for the bikers.
Nope.
I mean, they're a danger. They're a menace. There are sidewalks for a reason.
If I was a cop, I'd be writing them up left and right for not, like you said, they don't stop at the stop signs. They don't stop at the traffic lights. They think they own the road.
How annoying is it when they all stop and get their coffee at the local coffee shop and you hear they're like click-clacking?
Yeah.
They're only on a bike ride to go somewhere else to get coffee to show people that they like, you know, walk around on their little, you know, their little shoes that like stomp around to make that like, you know, tap dancing noise. That's the only reason they go on bike rides, is to go to a new city, grab coffee, make sure everyone knows that they're like a biker gang. And then they ride back to their respective city where there's coffee shops blocks from them that they didn't have to go to.
They look like little emperor penguins walking around with their little shoes on.
Little shoes that are tight and their little bulge from their tight little things that they're wearing. You know what I'm talking about.
You have a straight moose knuckle in front of the biker shorts.
Dude, it's the worst. Stevie, great point. They show up in droves to the one location where they get a taco and a coffee or whatever it is.
I mean, just be a normal person like John and myself. Ride a Peloton, go to a SoulCycle class. Just do it in the comfort of your own home. I know Sam doesn't exercise, so he would never ride a bike.
No, I appreciate the guy though I see just on like a 7-speed mountain bike with normal clothes on, just riding around. Shout out to that person.
Or like the person like with the kid on the back of their bike, right? And the little, and then they stop at the stop sign. Like, shout out. Jack, anything to add?
No, actually, I don't think I'm as harsh as you guys on this.
Are you in one of those groups that like goes to like Joe's coffee shop in the morning?
Next episode, I'm going to wear my outfit. It's going to be a sick fit. OTD. I'm going to come on with my moose knuckle right in front of the camera and my big ass in those biker shorts. No, I think, imagine. My butt wouldn't even fit on one of those seats, so no, I don't ride the bike.
They're super uncomfortable.
Well, that's why they have to wear those crazy outfits, because you got to have that padding, especially if you're a guy. You got to have that padding there so you're not like just hurting the boys the whole time you're going to the coffee shop. But I do think like, where else do you guys want them to go? I know you said mountains and all that, but like if you're actually like ride bikes, like if that's like your thing and your hobby, where else do you want them to go?
Drive outside the city.
The parks. Go to the parks.
Yeah, the park. Out small roads outside the city and stop at the stop signs. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, just abide by the same rules as cars.
I agree with that. I do think that they get away with murder at times. But no, I think they're annoying, but I'm not like as crazy annoyed at them as you guys are. Except when they do like hit you from like 100, 200 feet up or yards up. They look back, make sure, then they hit you with the arm out when they're going to turn this way. And I'm like, yo, it's like those little things are annoying.
The serious ones too. Got that little mirror thing that comes out on the helmet.
Yeah. And the click clacking. Great point, Stevie. That's the worst part about it. On the tile floors at the restaurant or the coffee shop. Yeah.
I also feel like it's way more of like maybe a Cali thing or where you guys are. I probably don't see you see road bikers as much. Well, I don't see them as much around here. We're golf cart life over here.
All right. Good rant, Sam. Well, we'll see. But we might have a new segment. Instead of Gossip Corner, it's just going to be like Sam's rants. Kind of rhymes.
I have topics for the next like 8 weeks for us on rants.
Yeah, I know you do. You kind of briefly showed us. So well done. I thought that was good. Stevie and I agree. Jack agrees, not quite as convincingly as both of us. But let's move on to Monte Carlo and some of our memories or lack thereof, considering we played this tournament collectively a combined 4 times. I played it twice. Stevie, you played it once. We played each other in the first round of that event. Jack, you never, ever played it, and which is kind of surprising. Sam, now I'm going to lead with you here. You played it once in 2008, like you just turned pro. You made the quarterfinals out of nowhere. And who did you lose? You lost to Djokovic. Okay, you got killed by Djokovic.
I got a question about that one later.
Quarters. Okay, fair enough. But you go to Monte Carlo and make the quarterfinals in 2008 using that like classic Prince racket.
The snowshoe racket. Do you have that one?
The Diablo. What was it called?
The Diablo.
Yeah, Red Diablo. Diablo. Yeah, love that racket from Prince. And then you played professional tennis for another 16 years and did not return to Monte Carlo. Can you tell us why?
I mean, look, I quarterfinal that year. It'd be like Moyen, Gasquet, Seppi, lost to Novak. It was just a one-off. It wasn't like I knew deep down, like, oh, I'm not like going back to Monte Carlo. It's a place I play well. I knew that was like an anomaly and probably not going to happen again. And as you guys know, when you play Monte Carlo as an American, you're kind of then like committed to this clay court season that's like 7 or 8 weeks long. So I was always very happy to like play Houston, then go back home for a couple weeks, then go back to Europe. And it's kind of cool to have the stat like you that I played Monte Carlo one time, popped a quarterfinal, and just kind of like left the room on a high.
Mic drop.
I just mic dropped Monte Carlo with a quarterfinal. It's not even that cool.
Yeah, a lot of riz.
Did you?
I won that tournament.
A lot of riz.
At what point playing Novak in the quarters? He was the first set 6-4, and then it was 6-0. When did you start thinking about your flight home?
I don't even think I did. I was at the tournament by myself. I didn't even go with a coach. I went last minute by myself. I was hanging out with Murphy Jensen all week.
Now that you mentioned that, I vaguely remember you just kind of like getting on a flight and going there. No coach, no nothing.
Yeah, warming up, hitting with like the local practice partner. Because I was still new to the tour. You know, I didn't even know any guys yet. But sometimes that's when you play your best. You have zero expectations. You don't know anyone. Like, I'm playing like Carlos Moya first round, but I'm not even thinking about it really. And just you go out there and
he had a lot
so
more experience
free
than you too.
Yeah.
You didn't need any experience for that.
Yep. And no coach, like you have a little more freedom to like, you know, take balls line when you shouldn't or like play erratic. And yeah, good. Just ran into Djokovic. It wasn't like I was going to beat him. And then I think it was like 4-4 first set. And then he won 8 games in a row.
Was this one of those like where like the Monte Carlo cut traditionally is just a little weaker than the other Master Series events because a lot of the Americans don't play? I think that's one reason. Was this one of those that like you snuck in at the last second? You're like, okay, I'll go.
Totally. Yeah. You know, I was ranked like 53 and the cut there back in the day was like, you know, 45, but then it dropped. And my coach at the time, Grant Doyle, was just like, I wasn't playing well. And he's like, I'm not going to go over there and watch you lose first round just for us to come home. And so I just went solo and then just kind of
proved him wrong.
It wasn't really proving him wrong necessarily, but just went over there with zero expectations. And as you guys know, like in all sports, sometimes when you have no expectations, like that's when you play your best.
Was there any other Americans over there with you or like what were you like? What was the dinner for SQ there in 2008?
I was the only American, Murphy Jensen, who you guys all know, at the time was there filming Murphy's Guide, like that Tennis Channel show. So I was going with him to like the Hard Rock Cafe every night. It was so ratchet, eating like chicken fingers and like cheeseburgers.
Anyway, any American half quarters though, at least?
Oh, it was probably Brian, some. Yeah, the Bryan brothers were there. They probably won it. But I, at the time, like I kind of knew them, but not really. It was like my second year on tour. So guys that I knew, I wasn't close enough to like go to dinner with them.
Well, I mean, talk a little bit about Monte Carlo. Like, is there a more beautiful setting on tour, like Beijing and the smog at 2 p.m. could beat it? No,
very
in
similar.
All seriousness. So serious. I'm trying to rack my brain. I don't think there's a more beautiful setting on tour than that tournament, especially that center court with the yachts in the back and the beautiful Mediterranean Sea. I mean, it's the best, right?
I would think maybe there's some terms that we haven't played, like Gestad and like Kitzbühel that are like up in the mountains. I'm not saying that those are better, but I think those are very picturesque from what I've seen on TV. But Monte Carlo, that center court, like when they do that, the camera from up top that looks down, you can see the whole sea, all the yachts and everything. Like it's a great place. And I enjoyed all 61 minutes I played out there against John.
Yeah, that stinks that you go over one time and you play Isner. You play an American.
He played unreal. He should have beaten Rafa that week. I'm sure he remembers.
I actually loved playing in Monte Carlo. So I played it twice. I played Rafa in 3 sets and he wasn't even, I remember that match. Like he wasn't playing well at all. Another year I played it, I think that was after the year I won Houston, I went over there and that was just too tough of a turnaround. Like just too tough and just hard to do that. But I also, think you guys are there. I played Davis Cup there. I will put their clay courts. It's the purest clay courts in the world. It's like purer than Roland Garros. It's like just the best clay. You never have to knock it out of your shoes ever.
Is it different than Roland Garros clay?
It's just something about the air. Something about the air.
The French Riviera air.
Yeah, the French Riviera. I just think that's the – it's very easy to play like really high quality tennis there. Everyone's happy. It's beautiful. Food's good. The hotel's good. The place is absurd, as we know. Like Stevie, you mentioned on Monday – the players, which I find actually super annoying. That could be a rant. All the ATP players and their like ridiculous sports cars in Monte Carlo.
Oh yeah.
Do they rent them or do they own them?
I just
them?
Remember.
No, they own them because they like, I think they own them.
Yeah, no, I just remember the one year I was there, I thought I was walking with John. I thought I was walking with John. And like Grigor comes flying by in like a baby blue, like Aston Martin or Ferrari, like something sick. And he just came flying by us. And I was like really hoping he would just take John like on a ride so his like head could be out of the top like a giraffe. Like he was not fit in that car. But it was like I enjoy it because I'm never planning on going back. So I like watching all the guys flaunt their wealth over there in Monte Carlo living tax-free.
Yeah, they live tax-free. Jack, like did you ever enter that tournament and pull out? Or did you just never want to no consideration to ever play it? Because like you would have been like quite nasty there. I mean it's tough. You can't.
Yeah, I was the same as Sam. Is like I didn't want to do 8 weeks in Europe or whatever it was. I enjoyed, obviously, we all loved Houston. I liked going home, like you said, and then kind of getting ready for the Europe swing, anyways. Because then there was always maybe a slight chance of staying after the French and maybe going into the grass. So I'd have probably rather done that than start earlier. Seeing the pictures and obviously watching the tournament hundreds of times on TV, yeah, it looks like one of the most incredible places. We got a small feel of it. We played Nice. They had a 250 the week before the French.
That's true.
Yeah. And we played that. I actually lost to John there. And but yeah, so it which is basically like a sistering town, obviously not Monte Carlo, but it's next door. So kind of got the feel of it a little bit. I would prefer to go back and not be playing tennis. I could go one day and just maybe enjoy being there. But Yeah, it was never on the schedule. I probably wish I would have gone one time to play it. And especially as much as I loved Clay, especially early on in my career, it would have been fun, but no.
You guys ever go to the casino there?
Not the big one, because you had to have like a tuxedo or a suit. Like you couldn't, like the James Bond
one. Yeah, with the jacket. Yeah, the James Bond one.
Is it like a James Bond casino when you're in there, or is it a letdown?
It was a bit stuffy, and they didn't have the automatic shufflers. Like, so it was like a 3-card deck. And you put back, yeah. And it just took forever. They would kept shuffling. It's like, oh, let's play. It was cool, though. I mean, it's for sure. Nice. When we played Davis Cup there, I mean, we stayed at, I think it was called the Hotel Paris. And like at that hotel, they have like, it's like one of the world's most expensive restaurants. We didn't eat there, but you know how it is in Davis Cup. Everything's paid for, beautiful room. We like had a great time. Our team played great. We beat them. I think it was the quarterfinals. We beat them and just like had a blast. That was right before. And then I think we all flew to Houston because it was that kind of March-ish time of the year. So I didn't go back there to play the tournament, but you know, Jack, you said that you regretted not playing it. Like, I'm very, like, happy that I played that tournament twice. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I didn't stay over there. Stevie, obviously, you the same. Like, and Sam, you too. Like, it was just a one and done. Like, go there, try to win a handful of matches at, like, at a big Masters event, and, like, come back home and then start preparing for Madrid, which was the few times I did play it. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I wish I would. Yeah, like I said, I wish I would have, but never did. It was also, out of the people listening, Monte Carlo is the one Master Series we're not required to play. So it was never a but most people may not know that, maybe why the draw doesn't look like some of the others. But yeah, it was usually a pretty hectic like start of the year, honestly, through Houston. And then I just wanted to just chill for a minute. And kind of just get my mind ready for the potentially long Euro swing kind of ahead starting in, yeah, we're in Madrid.
Like, it would have been better if it was Rome, Monte Carlo back to back instead of like Rome, Madrid. This is purely like a calendar decision that everyone made. Because, yeah, obviously we would have loved to go to Monte Carlo every year.
Yeah, it's just long. You go for 8 weeks through the French Open. Then you have to go back for the grass. You know, Sam, myself, wanted to play all the weeks on grass. I know John didn't. Jack was 50-50 probably. So I wanted to maximize my time on the grass. So I skipped a lot of the clay season so I could play, you know, the 2 250s and 500 leading up to Wimbledon. So it's just a personal choice on my behalf, but I am glad I went the one time and lost to John.
Yeah. And they put us on center court. Like,
yeah, it was the most surprising scheduling I've ever seen. Yeah.
We spoke about that. Yeah. It was just ridiculous. Like some of the crowds from this tournament, like absolutely amazing. Like the crowd on Sunday for qualifying, last round of qualifying and the first round of the main draw, like center court, completely packed. Tournament's amazing, as we talk about. It's just picturesque. The food, everything about it. Great tournament. It's one of the marquee events on the ATP Tour. I think we talked about, on Monday, like being jealous of like not having a tournament in Charleston. I think the WTA would love to have a tournament in Monte Carlo. A lot of tennis players on the men's and the women's side live there for tax reasons, as we know. The guys train there in the off season before they go to Australia because the weather could be still quite warm in December, and they have this big tournament there right now. So huge event, and we're fans of it and excited to see who takes the title ultimately. So I mentioned at the intro that we might throw a little Monte Carlo trivia into this episode, and that's exactly what we're going to do. We have no idea what these questions are, but Charlie and his team have sourced some questions for us. I think we all work collectively.
Concise answer.
Okay, all work collectively.
So, all right, here's the question. What was the first year of the event? 1866, 1896, 1926, or 1946?
I'm thinking 1946. I don't think they played tennis in the 20s. They definitely didn't play in the 1800s.
I
feel like A and B like need to be out.
I think it's D.
Are they in there just to like mess with us? I think it's C.
No, because I feel like if we would have heard this was like the 99th annual.
Yeah, but did Bill Tilden win it?
99th annual was not a thing.
What do you think? Bill Tilden's like 140 years old?
No, I'm just saying, but like we're getting to the press. It would have noticed on that. Like you're getting close to, you know, a year 100. I think they would have mentioned at some point, like next year will be the 100th or.
Stevie and I think it's 1946. Yeah. And Jack and John think it's 1926.
We'll split it up.
They like the big D. They like the big D. We're on C. Yeah.
26.
I knew it. I was going to say B or C. I knew it.
1896. How do we verify this? They were not playing tennis in the 1800s.
They were only throwing in the 1800s because it had to be one of them. I knew it was going to be B.
1800 was just like the prince and his buddy playing, and they created a tournament called the Monte Carlo Open and like gave the winner a trophy.
I knew it was going to be B. God.
Probably true. You're probably not wrong on that.
Okay, here we go. In 1896,
George Whiteside.
From the UK, George Whiteside Hilliard defeated Victor Voss.
Wait, Victor Voss is a sick name.
So the scoring was just like still the same back then too.
It does look like Victor Voss was just couldn't get over the hump in the first couple of years.
But look at that forehand.
George Whiteside. It's the most British name ever.
Doherty and Lawrence Doherty, the brothers, look like they were just dominating.
Oh, they were a dynasty.
Voss couldn't even finish the matches mostly. He finished back-to-back year retirements. You think he cramped?
So Voss never got it done.
I love the 1900 might not have been played.
There's a guy named Wilberforce if you keep scrolling down.
Wilberforce Eves.
Wilberforce.
I must ask you a question, Wilberforce.
He went away in the fifth.
What look, a he crushed, name. He,
a lot of finals for him.
Then Aussie won in 1908. How did he get there?
Who, Macca?
That must have taken him like a year on a boat.
That's incredible. Oh, sorry. A Kiwi. My bad. It's the flag is so small, I can't see.
But still, come over by boat then, right?
Yeah. I mean, come on. Let's go to the next one, team. I knew this was going to pop up.
I know the answer to this one.
And how many times has Rafa won this tournament? 7, 9, 11, or 13?
Sam?
I know, but you guys want to guess or do you want me to? No, it's 11.
It's 13.
11.
I'm the worst.
Another Isner does he know? He thinks he knows it for sure.
No, I know. I wasn't confident on that one. Okay, here we go. How many consecutive titles did Rafa win at Monte Carlo after his first in 2005?
It feels like 8, doesn't it?
It feels like 8. I was going to say C. So counting 2005.
I'm
going to go 8.
I like 8.
Right. I'm going to
I'm going to be the loner and go B.
I'm going to go 10.
It's got to be more than 6, actually. What am I talking about?
8. Stevie, nice. You and I are on fire right now.
Let's go, dude. Historians. I just remember the one year that Rafa won Monte Carlo. He lost like 6 games the entire tournament.
Yeah,
he would roll through
it,
people.
It was insane.
Pretty good. Here we go. Who was the last winner of the Monte Carlo Masters before Nadal won it 8 straight times from 2005? Our choices are Guillermo Coria, Juan Carlos Ferreira, Gustavo Kuerten.
Did you say Juan Carlos Ferreira?
Yeah,
Ferrero.
You combined Juan Carlos Ferrero and Wayne Ferreira.
Yeah, you're right.
To Juan Carlos Ferreira.
I was trying to do it with an accent, and I screwed
and he
it
said,
up.
He said it a little sus, yeah, too. That's a little weird.
Let's start over. Guillermo Coria, Juan Carlos Ferrero, Gustavo Guga Kuerten, or Fed?
I'm going to go
with
A.
I'll go with B.
I don't think, I'm going to go A.
I'll go Fed.
I'm going to go Fed, too.
I'm going to go A.
Stevie.
I don't think this big Coria this could fan. Be a complete miss. Did Roger ever win Monte Carlo?
Probably.
I thought.
I don't know.
He lost to Stan in the final.
Did
the year Stan won the
Guillermo Coria was the answer. Thank you.
I can't believe Guillermo Coria won Monte Carlo.
I looked that up.
2004.
Who has played the most editions of Monte Carlo? Feels like a trick question. Stan, Federer, Nadal or Djokovic? Who's played the most editions of Monte Carlo?
It feels too obvious, but it's got to be Stan.
Oh, Novak.
Whoa, not even
18. Yeah. I was going to say Novak, dang it.
Wow.
Sam, you did not. You barely missed this list, Sam.
Barely.
Novak's played it 18 times. Rafa, 17. Fabrice Santoro.
Wow.
16, the magician. All right, we have to work collectively on this one. We have to agree, okay?
Oh, geez.
Oh, wow. Okay, when was the last time an American made the singles final? 87, 1987, 1992, 1997, or 2002? Goodness.
It's got to be B or C, right?
My gut says B or C. It's like a Courier, Agassi.
Courier, Chang, Agassi, those are good.
It's one of those guys. So I'm going to say B or C. That's my thought process.
I feel like C's too late.
The greatest year ever.
I like B too.
All right. Two for B.
B or C, but I'll go with B. We have to work collectively.
We'll go as a group here.
1992.
Bam!
Oh, who was it?
Stevie.
Who was it? Probably nobody I said.
Jim.
Crickstein.
Yeah. The Crickstein, yeah.
Oh, and it shows how much we know. Fed has never won Monte Carlo. That's kind of surprising. But I mean, seeing as Rafa never lost.
That seems like when you say it out loud.
Right, yeah. Rafa got in his way 11 times.
Yeah, but you say that a stat like that out loud, it doesn't seem right for Roger to not win an event.
All right, that was good. Stevie, you did very well.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was horrendous. We have a mailbag, guys, and I think we're going to get into that right now. We've been receiving a lot of questions to our website at nothingmajorshow.com. As I mentioned, or we've all mentioned, it's very easy to navigate. And so we've had some questions flow into there, and we appreciate them. So if you guys looked at the list, is there anything in particular that you want to answer?
I want the one from Joe Bertolomi. Which tournament in America do you wish – sorry, which city in America you wish had a tour event?
Okay, we can't say Charleston because we can't say Charleston.
Obviously, yeah, we won't want a Charleston. That. I would want one in like a small city. Sometimes I feel like tournaments in small cities, like the entire city gets around it. So like, you know, something in like Portland, Maine, or then there used to be one in Vermont back in the day that I think was cool.
I want it on the southwestern half of the United States in like a Scottsdale. Big tennis community, great golf around there. You always got to think about what's around the tournament.
I have a two-part biased and non-biased. I actually think, weirdly enough, Kansas City is a lot of tennis. People here, sports are also incredible here. Stop it, Stevie. I'm gonna stop. Whatever.
Beach.
They had World Team Tennis here. That's a good start.
Yeah.
And then I think like it's like a summer event in like a park city or like a Colorado, somewhere cool with like sick scenery and like where it's like perfect out during the summer would be also be really cool. Your guys' faces are just crazy during that.
John, what about one of your 9 hometowns?
Yeah, I'm gonna say one of them.
Yeah, which one? Greensboro, Tampa, Athens, no. Atlanta, Dallas.
You nailed it. I'm going to say Athens.
Athens?
Yeah, you said a small town.
Yeah, but
Lincoln, Nebraska should have one then too.
Your small town already has the University of Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you've seen how well that Athens, Georgia supports the NCAA. They could support an ATP or WTA event very well. Athens, Georgia's the answer.
I don't know.
But I like where your head's at. And the small northeastern towns are so awesome in the summer, Sam. So like I wasn't going to say that. You did. So
True. Good point.
I hate agreeing with John, but he's right. Athens, I think, would hold a nice event there.
Can we do a like a tally thing on that? Like put up our thing and see what fans like would agree with which cities?
Let me tell you what's getting no love, Kansas City.
You know what's getting a lot of love is Kansas City. big trust. Is there no doubt that means, but big trust on that. Kansas City would be.
Kansas City ain't got no riz.
Are you serious? Well, the biggest sports towns in the world now. What do you mean? This place is popping.
It's like take away the Chiefs and it's like average Riz.
You can say that and take away the Cali. Well, you can take away anybody in a big city. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, here's a good one. All right. From Gustavo Canella and a listener from outside of the United States. We appreciate you guys. His question is, have you ever wondered if we as a group overestimate American tennis players?
Like overrate them?
We're properly rated as.
Oh, you overestimate. That's the question. Yeah.
I don't think we overestimate. I think our loyalty and lies with like fellow American players. I think we want to see them be successful. We know how good they are. We know how hard the sport is, obviously, and majority of winners of tournaments over, you know, since we all have known tennis, probably, you know, it's not Americans, but I think we know how good the guys, you know, from the U.S. are. And I think we want to see them do well and we want to see them win. So we probably side with them maybe at times a little more, but that's not because, I don't think we're overestimating them. I just think we'd like to see them do well and we know how good they are.
I think you nailed it. I think we properly rate them. Like, it's not like we think a bunch of Americans. We just, earlier in the week, we said, who do we think is going to win Roland Garros and all these clay court events? No one said an American.
You know, I think
we have a little more optimistic when it gets to the grass, but I think we properly rate the Americans, you know, over the last 10 years.
As I think American tennis fans, like older than us, like, you know, super spoiled growing up with all the great champions in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and in early 2000s. It's not the case now. And I think you're right, Sam. I think we properly rate them.
Can I ask you this? Is there anything better than beating like a European clay courter in Europe, like in Rome or something like that? It just, there's the best feeling.
Yeah, it is the best feeling. And they feel like, oh, it's an American on clay. Well, it's like, you know, no, it's like, especially if the weather's hot, it's like kind of fast out there on the clay courts.
All right. We got Riley Opelka interview airing right now. Again, we filmed this I don't know, 6 weeks ago before all the PTPA drama came out. So let's get to our Riley Opelka interview. In 2022, you had hip surgery. You're out for like 2 years, basically. You're coming back now, as we all know. What the hell did you do for 2 years? I don't, like, we've all had injuries where you've been out for like a few months and it's like kind of miserable. 2 years, like, how did you mentally, was that difficult? One, and two, going back to my first question, like, what did you do for 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, just like anything, yeah, of course you have some doubts. You're just wondering. For me, the worst being in a holding pattern, not knowing what I'm doing. Because at one point, I wasn't sure if I'd be able to come back or not. I really, you know, I don't know. So I kind of, the second year, I spent most of it traveling the world seeing doctors. And as John calls me, the MRI bot, spent a lot of time, yeah, MRI go bot. Yeah, I spent a ton of time in the MRI machine. And and I went and saw, I don't know if you guys have ever had an injury where you tell someone about it, like not in tennis, I don't know, one of your friends, and they're like, oh yeah, I have a guy for that. I have the best. It's the worst, right? So everyone has a guy. So like, you know, wherever I'm at, if I'm like training at the club I train at, this one guy, I remember he was telling me, he's like, yeah, I go to Stretch Zone. I'll send you my guy's contact at Stretch Zone and he'll fix your wrist. And I'm like, not
Stretch Zone.
Yeah. And so obviously I'd said no to every, you know, of course, I'm like, ah, whatever. No thanks. For pretty much a year straight. And then I was joking, but I saw the movie Yes Man on Christmas Eve. I don't know if you guys have seen that movie.
Yeah, Jim Carrey.
And so my joke was with my friend I watched it with, I was telling him, like, that's going to be me. I'm going to start saying yes to everyone that has a guy for me to see. And literally the next day, I went to a Dolphins game. And I met this guy at the game, and he was telling me, he was like, yeah, I have this guy, you know, I really recommend you. I was like, yes, I'm in. And so he puts me on text with this guy, and I really didn't have much context at all. And the guy told me, he's like, oh, yeah, you really should go to Germany and see this guy's the best. The guy in Germany, I'm like, yeah, sure, yeah, yes, I'm in. So I went, I said yes to everything, and I went to Germany, I went to Belgium, I went to Dallas, I went to Atlanta a few times, and then LA.
Real quick,
and then,
is this all for the hip? Or you also had two wrist surgeries? So sorry, people know. Yeah, is this for both of these things?
This was just for the wrist.
Okay.
Because I was having some nerve problems, so this was purely just for the wrist, and so I made like a little world tour. I remember John was like texting me, checking in on me, and he's like, you know, if you MRI bought it this week, and I was like, yeah, I got two of them, and so anyway, I ended up my last stop when I was like, I'm over this. My last stop of the Yes Man tour was in Las Vegas. And I saw this Canadian guy who completely fixed me. And I kind of knew like right away when he did it, something, there was a nerve problem and something moved. And I got like feeling back in my fingers. I was having some numbness and tingling in my three fingers all the time. And that guy saved me. And he was my last stop literally on the Yes Man tour.
No way. So you could still be sidelined right now had you not gone on the Yes Man tour.
Yeah, exactly. Yes Man tour is huge.
All right, so you were gone for kind of 2 years. You're back. Do you feel like tennis is like cooler now than even 2 years ago? We've talked about this before. It seems like it's got like momentum's not the word, but like it got some like extra flair around tennis right now. Have you noticed a change in just like 2 years?
Totally. Yeah, there's so much more flair. I don't know what. I think it's a bunch of things that have kind of happened. It's a massive changing of the guard. Alcaraz and Yannick are super entertaining. A part of it, it's like been cooler throughout the world, but especially here in the US, like we really have guys that are contending to win slams.
We know this, and other people are starting to know this, like when it comes to other tennis players, you know, your interests are a little different. Art, fashion, food, culture, like you are like dialed in with all that stuff. You always ask us about artists and designers. We have no idea what you're talking about. We pretend like we do. At what point were you like into that stuff? Was that something that you were like kind of passionate about and into like when you were 15, or has that kind of come about like since you've started traveling the world playing tennis kind of in your 20s?
I think one thing kind of leads to another. I've always loved music, and you know, some guys make references. I've always loved like Lou Reed and Bob Dylan and like Velvet Underground, and that was all assembled by Andy Warhol. And you know, a lot of those guys made references to a lot of like, some of their biggest inspiration was a lot of different poets. And then some of those poets' inspiration was artists. So they kind of all bounce off of one another. So I think once you get into one and you really get into something, it's super likely that you get into the next because you want to know where they're getting their inspiration from. So I'd say like when I was like 15, 16, I always loved music. And then that kind of led me into, you know, another direction of trying to dig and find what they were referencing in some of those songs. And then once I turned pro and I was spending more time in Europe, I had a lot more exposure to museums. And no matter what city you're in Europe, no matter like how small it is, you'll find a great museum that's got like 10 Picassos. And in the States, that just, you know, it doesn't, outside of like New York and LA, it doesn't really exist. But in Europe, you can be in, you know, anywhere in France and Italy, and you'll find a museum that has like a couple of Picassos, which is crazy. And so when I was like 18, 19, and I just turned pro, I really kind of tapped into that access that I had just because I was traveling all the time. And I got pretty hooked.
Do you pick your schedule ever on like where museums are?
No. Oh. I do not.
You have nice art at your house. Is the value of all the art at your house worth more than the amount of cash you currently have in the bank?
I don't know. It's not. It's never for sale. It'll never be for sale.
You gotta hold diamond hands.
Yeah, I don't buy art to sell. I'm not in the business of it. Of everything I've bought, I couldn't imagine parting with any of them. Even the ones that I kind of kick myself for buying now, when I look at it, it's like, wow, you know, I don't really see why I like that artist, let's say. But I keep them because I think it's important for a collection. I'd love to be able to, you know, 60 years from now, look at all of it and have memories from each one.
When it comes to fashion, you're into clothes fashion as well. What, give us like two guys on the tour that are like the best, have like the best fashion sense.
I think, I mean, it's tough because Tommy, the Nothing Major hottie finalist, he kind of just makes everything look really good. Like there's times when he would pull a shirt out of my closet and he's like, yeah, like, I don't know. He's like, I need a shirt. And he'd wear it and it would look cool. And I'm like, how?
I guess like when you're hot, everything looks good on you, right?
Yeah, I'm 10 inches taller than him, and he's wearing this shirt that would probably look ridiculous if it was reciprocated, if I were, you know. And somehow he pulled it off like perfectly, and it looked way better on him than it ever would on me. So I think that's a big part of it. I think Tommy is definitely up there. And then I would say number two is Yannick. Obviously, Gucci's making stuff for him, but you see him on all the billboards. It's just, he's kind of got the cool fashion look. I don't know. I think Yannick's definitely one of the best dressed guys on tour.
I agree with that. What, and we touched on it a little bit ago about tennis being a little bit, I mean, cooler now, I guess, and more viewed. Seems like people are following along. What do you think tennis is doing right now in its current state? What do you think they're doing right at the moment to make it people more aware of what's going on?
It's hard to say exactly. I think it's so many different things that have kind of piled up. There is a changing of the guard, like I mentioned. You know, we got so used to Roger, Rafa, Novak for so long that people would just go to tournaments to only see them. And then I think now with, you know, Yannick and Carlos, it's different kind of flair, especially Carlos. He's probably the hottest ticket you can buy right now. You're going to see more highlights from him than you will see from like any other player. But he still could lose, you know. He could very well win that tournament, but he could also lose in the second, third round. And I think that there's, for the first time now, especially with Yannick not being present, I'd say at Indian Wells, there is, we can officially say the draw is open, or let's call it like up for grabs. For the longest time, it was just three guys that were likely to win the tournament. And even now, like, I don't know, I always said, I'd be curious to hear your guys' thoughts on this. There's a larger discrepancy in ranking between Yannick, who's number one in the world, and let's say the guy who's number seven in the world, or Tommy, let's call it. And there's a larger discrepancy in level between them than there is between number seven in the world and number 60 in the world. I think like Yannick's more likely to beat the seventh best player 8 or 9 times out of 10 than the seventh best player is to beat the 60th best player in the world 8 or 9 times out of 10.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, with his level right now.
And I think you'd probably say the same with Novak during, you know, like in Novak's prime, or when Roger was one in the world, you'd say the same. When Novak was one in the world, and now with Yannick being one in the world, you'd say the same. And now, you know, for the short term, for the next 3 months, we don't have that. So there is it is as open as ever for here through till whenever he's back.
I think I would also agree with that too. And I think you have a very good sense of like, or you have a very good understanding of the tour, have a lot of good ideas. So on the flip side of that last question, what do you think tennis should be doing or could be doing to make it even more mainstream, even though the buzz is picking up and I feel like the hype is picking up around it, like you said, in the States, but what do you think could be done in the tennis world to even make it more mainstream?
It's hard because it's such a, there's so much to it, but I'd say the one clear fix is we don't have a massive media rights deal. You know, we just, of all the big sports, we're the ones that don't. And it's because all the Grand Slams operate independently from one another. So there has always been this talk. I mean, the easy answer that every single person would agree with is if all the tournaments could aggregate as one, you know, and fall under one large entity, we could do a massive media rights deal, just like other sports have. And then you can, you know, monetize off of that from gambling rights. We're the second most bet upon sport in the world. You know, we'd be able to sell this massive, massive group deal towards either, you know, Amazon or whoever would buy it, just like every other sport, and pay a ton of money. And that would change the structure of tennis. I think that would change a lot of things. I think the sport would evolve so much more. I think guys ranked 150, 250 in the world would be able to have a coach and a physio, and the level would just start to increase. But that's just never going to happen, as you know. I mean, Wimbledon would rather burn money than partner with the ATP.
Probably not wrong there. To the hot topic of the doubles controversy, I guess you could say, your quote was they should 100% get rid of dubs. It's for failed singles players. There's no such thing as a double specialist. They don't sell a single ticket. We just wanted to get your comments, thoughts. Do you regret anything that you say, double down on what you said, or just give a little context behind your quote there?
I think what I said was 100% correct. I don't think there was any, I think it's all right. Have you ever met a junior tennis player, like when you were growing up at the USTA tournaments, all you guys, have you ever met a kid that said like, I'm here at Winter Nationals to, you know, I'm playing singles, but I really want to be a doubles player when I grow up.
That's such a good point. No, that's never existed in the history of tennis.
And if it has, it's been for one team and one team only. It's Mike and Bob.
Correct. Yeah. Like,
that's it.
They definitely don't bring in, I mean, it costs 20% of singles players, it costs 20% of the tournament's revenue. I mean, if you look at it from, especially they kill the challengers and they kill the ATP 250s, like just destroy those tournaments. And that affects the tour massively, in my opinion, because someone, you know, 200 in the world should be able to afford a coach and physio and have a decent quality of life. You know, those a guy 200 in the world is pretty darn good at what he does. And if you got rid of doubles, the challenger, that would free up so much money, so much court time, so much expenses from the hotels, the referees, the food that they're responsible for on site, prize money, everything. So I think that would, you know, propel the sport forward quite a lot just by giving challenger guys more money.
Have any doubles players confronted you, whether it's like face to face or via text, via social media, or have you just seen some stuff? You haven't been tagged, but obviously they're referring to you. And maybe give me, if you don't mind, a handful of doubles guys in your mind that are extremely salty about your opinions.
Great question. You know, the beauty so far about Indian Wells is they're not allowing doubles guys on site till Saturday, which is unbelievable. Everyone's super happy about it. It's funny. I've actually had way more like support here the last few days than anything. I think all the dubs guys think that I'm like the only one that thinks this way, which is hilarious. I'm like, dude, you're really that delusional. You think I'm the only person that thinks this? Like, I thought you guys knew.
You're the only one brave enough to speak out about it.
I guess so. I haven't had any, like, nothing directed really towards me. You know, I know there's some salty guys. People have sent me things on, like, guys I've never even heard of, to be honest. They're probably, like, 40 in the world of doubles. That happens all the time. Like, I remember there's one player, singles player, that was, there's these two other guys practicing. We're hitting at the U.S. Open, and it's like, geez, who are those guys? How do they get their own court? Because we were, like, splitting for the first 30 minutes, and I was like, I have no clue. And I was like, I haven't been on tour in a while. My coach Jay was like, I've never seen them before in my life. We look them up, they're like top 8 in the world in doubles. nobody knew who they were. No one knew who they were. I'm curious to see once the Dubs guys get here. I think they'll be fine. I think they, for the most part, they get it. There's always going to be a couple salty ones, a couple usual suspects. Jack, people would get mad when I call it half court, but I miss having Jack as, you know, number one Dubs player in the world, because I'd be like, guys, that term came from the number one doubles player in the world. It's not me that invented half court. That's what Jack calls it.
I could play some doubles and still kind of make fun of it a little bit.
There was nothing, because Sock could enter with anybody.
Yeah, it was Sock plus one.
And then the other thing too is, as a Dubs guy, you didn't want to piss Jack off, because if you did and he had a forehand, he'd kill you.
What is his reputation? Yeah, Jack, I have thinks, for this?
Jack is really, like, so that. Lost at this. He started so many controversies with all his partners.
Riley, you hit the nail on the head. There's two in particular that come to my mind right away. There's Davis Cup against Joe Salisbury.
He deserved it.
And Marcelo Melo at the ATP Finals in London.
He absolutely deserves it.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because I want our team here at Nothing Major to put those two forehands together in a clip and show them and put it out on social, just to see how hard. I mean, I just want people to rewatch those two forehands, because Jack, that's why I said I think I only played against you in doubles one time. Like, I was always so happy to be on your team, because your forehand was completely absurd, and you didn't need pace to hit a hard forehand. You just needed a little floater, and that's what made it so scary. So
yeah, when I was playing against Sock the one time that I played him in dubs, it was so frightening. Like, him when he has a forehand, you're just at the net, you're really scared if it's gonna come at you or not.
That was the match, I think, when Fritzy called me a fat doubles player.
but Jack, back to you. You were number one in the world in the doubles. Did you ever, and we know the answer to this, but did you ever one time practice doubles?
No, absolutely not. The only time I did was the drill we did at Davis Cup when I got close to the net and knocked off volleys.
No, yeah, that, and the other one too, I remember one year was I think, Jack, we were in New York. I don't know if it was, we went to New York after the World Tour Finals, and then I think you said something, we were talking about, dude, that match you played a joke or something, and you were like, yeah, I don't think I warmed up. I think I just kind of, and you're like, I didn't even warm up for that match. I just showed up.
With Mike, I didn't take the boat ride over on any of the off days, and Mike was there hitting with an alternate or like a practice partner for hours with Macca.
You're like, I didn't hit a ball all week, and you just went there and just tooled everybody. Yeah, Sock would barely lose games. There'd be times when he would barely lose games in dubs.
Wow, those are some fun times.
Yeah, all right, big fella. One last hot seat question here for us. You're the Met Gala co-host and responsible for inviting 5 tennis stars. Who makes the list? I think it can be past, present, doesn't matter, but who makes the list for your table at the Met Gala?
McEnroe number one.
John McEnroe, not Patrick.
John McEnroe, yep. I would bring Yannick Noah. And then I would go with Tommy. I would go with Fritz, and I'd go with Query.
Query? What?
Honorable mention.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I would love to see.
Only because you want to rip his fashion. You've ripped his fashion every day.
It would just be unbelievable to see cue ball at the Met Gala.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that is true. That is a good point.
He would be wearing, like, you know, a Gucci suit with a Nothing Major hat.
And I think he held the champagne like this walking around or something.
His suit would definitely not be fitting.
He'd wear those Gucci loafers he bought back in the day.
No, it'd be unbelievable. And then one of my favorites was this year at US Open, cue ball, and I did a little Nothing Major pop or some sort of pop before the US Open. And while we were walking to, like, the media room, a couple people were like, oh, we love the podcast. He's like, oh, you do? He's like, did you... you subscribe, you listen to it? And they're like, yeah. He's like, pull your phone, I want to see it. Exactly. He did it to like 3 people on the way. He's like, pull your phone, if you like it so much, I want to see it. I want to see it was so good.
And a little context there. Sam has left left the call. He had a run, take care of the kids really quickly. But that is all we have for Mr. Junior Servbot himself, Riley Opelka. We are glad he is back healthy, playing some great tennis. And thank you so much for joining the show, dude. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bot.
Honor to be on Nothing Major.
Thanks so much, Riley. Hey, good luck out there.
All right, perfect. See you guys.
All right, everyone. That is a wrap on Friday's show of Nothing Major. Good to recap Monte Carlo, our experiences. Thank you to Riley Opelka, the big fella, for the second part of that wonderful interview. Don't forget to head to our website, nothingmajorshow.com, to submit a fan question or put in a commercial/media request. We love hearing from you guys, and we will get to you at some point. And now it is a time to roast a fan segment. And this fan should be on some comfortable courts that Jack Sock may know very well from Lincoln, Nebraska. So let's get to it.
Love the podcast. My name is Brian Adams, not the singer. The 47-year-old 4-5 tennis player from Lincoln, Nebraska. Feel free to roast me, guys. I was playing today at Jack Sock Tennis Center. This is my home court here in Lincoln at Firethorn Country Club. Love the podcast, guys. Roast away. Bye.
Cool little personal video to get, you know?
It went on a little long, but let's get to it.
All right, when we get a video from a fan at the Sam Querrey Tennis Complex, let me know.
How far away is the camera angle? We can't even see it.
That way. Oh, no.
Something's off about it.
It, like, gets the job done, but it...
I love the scenery, though. I love what Jack has done with the tennis complex.
He did say he's, like, a 4-5. It's, like, a... Looks like a 4-5. Does he only hit forehands?
Well, if he's on the Jack Sock tennis court, it should only be...
That's all you do in Lincoln. It's all you do in Lincoln growing up. You don't... Zero backhand.
Nobody has hit a backhand.
He's got, like, a loose little wrist. He gets, like, really below the ball.
Got good torque on the legs, though. That's good.
We need to add Stevie's name to this tennis complex as a forehand, guys.
It's like, I don't like how it looks, but I don't know why. It just, like, doesn't sit right with me. Yeah, we don't know where these balls are landing. He says
that doesn't
true.
Matter. That's irrelevant.
Smart. He smartly set up the camera. These could be off.
That's
the
actually
fit.
True. Yeah. What do you have? He say he's 40-some years old.
He looks like a 4-0, yeah, though, right?
Overestimating another American tennis player. He's not
a 4-0. Yeah, we have a 4-0.
I don't know, but it looks like a nice day in Lincoln, nonetheless, you know?
It does. The golf course is right over there, too. My dad's house is right over there. So
thank you, Brian, for submitting.
I feel like I know who Brian Adams is, but maybe not.
Got that song, Summer of 69, right?
Do believe so.
Or you know, yes. That one's like, no. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah,
Charlie
right.
Said yes. So, yeah.
Things will never be the same. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I think that's Brian Adams.
Well, can you keep going? I wasn't sure.
I don't know any more words.
You sure?
You hit the background, I'll hit the lyrics, and you give me the background.
We'll pull it up for next week. We'll do a duet at the end of the show.